At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Grizzly. At Grizzly, we believe charging your electric vehicle should be simple, reliable, and affordable. That's why we design, engineer, and build our chargers in Canada, ensuring top-tier quality and performance. Powered by United Chargers, every Grizzly model is crafted in-house, built to withstand extreme conditions, and tested for reliability. Recognized by leading publications for its performance and value, Grizzly delivers both durability and intelligence with heavy-duty aluminum enclosures, premium output cables, and smart charging features like scheduling, usage tracking, and OCPP compatibility with multiple charging apps. Grizzly. Simple. Reliable. Affordable. Built for every climate, every EV, everywhere you go. Visit grizzly.com to learn more.
Hello and welcome to the Batteries Included podcast. It's Friday, August the 15th, 2025, and this is episode 101. On today's show, we'll be talking about Ford announcing a $30,000 electric truck, the debut of the Acura RSX, riding in robo-taxis from Tesla and Waymo, and of course, much, much more. I'm your host, Dominic Yoni, longtime electric vehicle journalist and host of the YouTube channel Drive Electric with Dominic, which should be coming out of Stacy's shortly. Joining us today is the vivacious Mr. Tom Malogny, senior editor at Inside EVs and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. Kyle Connor will hopefully be joining us here in a few minutes from the majestic, practically palatial halls of Out of Spec Studios. And our special guest this week is Christopher Bow, host of the Bow Family EV YouTube channel and also host of the Turn Down for What podcast. And he has a day job as well, working for International Delivery Services Company. Oh, and he's also a Ford F-150 Lightning owner. And so thank you for joining us, Chris.
Yeah, happy to be here. Good morning, you guys.
All right. So, hey, what do you do over there at FedEx, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, we have a warehouse that supports all of the FedEx offices, what used to be Kinko's. And we have a warehouse that's a regional one that supports all the printing for big commercial products. We do all of Northern California, Hawaii, and Northern Nevada. So that's my gig. It's a 24-hour building, small driver group that just drives amongst the little stores. And yeah, it's a great company and allows me to do a lot of cool things. And it lets me poke my head. You know, some of our vehicles are electric, so I get to do things like ACT Expo and those kind of things as part of that.
Sweet. Right on. I don't know if you know, I used to work for FedEx, but just like as a driver, you know, like a regional driver, I'd go up to a town about 150 miles or so away, unload, we'll do a sort, and then load the thing back up and go back down. Back on the Tallahassee. So yeah, it's been a few years now though, but I love that job. That was great.
Love it. Yeah, it's great company.
Yeah.
And I worked at your competitor, UPS, for UPS. A little while.
Yeah, yeah. We love all the delivery partners out there, you know?
I didn't know that, Tom. What'd you do back then? What'd you do for you?
I worked when I was in college. I was trying to save up for my car, and I had a job. I worked at Fortune Off, which was a department store, during the day. But then I said, I need more money. So I worked pre-sort at UPS, the 4 a.m. to 8 a.m. shift.
Oh,
and
man.
At 8 a.m., I drove to college. So I wouldn't take any classes before 9:30. And so after working the 4 a.m. to 8 a.m. shift, I drove to college. And I did that for 1 year and made a lot of money because I was working at night at Fortune Off, working there. But it was a tough job. They, like, you know, I was in Presort. I don't know if it's set up the same way as FedEx, Chris, but it's like there was this platform and all the boxes from the whole facility came into us. And there was 10 of us. And we had to put them on one of four belts, depending yep. on the zip code. And you had to know them. And there was someone standing over your shoulder with a stopwatch. And you had to average, I forget what it was. I think it was 45 to 55 boxes per minute or something like that. It was almost like a box a second. You had to flip it, look at it, put it on a belt. And if you were running low, they were standing over you on a pop. They'd be like, Mahogany, you're down to 35 boxes. Pick it up, you know. And it was like, I mean, they were practically with whips on us, you know, and do that from 4 a.m. to 8 a.m. But the pay was exceptional for a college person at the time. I was making like, I don't know, I think $15 an hour, which back in 1986 was ridiculous.
Wow.
You know, yeah. And yeah, so I saved up. I did in 1 year, I saved up enough to buy my own car. So it was worth it.
That's a young man's game, man. They've automated a lot of that now. A lot of the hard sort now is going then from the sort belt into the truck. But our big ones are Memphis, Tennessee, Indianapolis, and Oakland. Those are the three really big ones. And when you see the sort belts, it's like looking at a maze. And they kick out these, they have these little hands now that they scan it along the belt, and it just kicks it down the different belts.
Wow. Yeah. And no, then, we were the scanners. And at the end of each shift, they would tell us how many miss sorts we had. And, and you know, they always blame all the miss sorts on the new guy, you know, and like, I remember the first couple of weeks, you know, we probably had more miss sorts than before I was there, because when you're new, I mean, there was like 150 zip codes. You had to know which belt it went on, you know, one of four belts. So it was, I probably did account for a larger percentage of the miss sorts in the beginning, but good times.
Awesome.
Right on. All right. So that's cool, Tom. I had no idea.
Yeah. I had a lot of jobs back in the day.
Yeah. All right. So let's, I guess, jump into some news real quick. On Monday, Ford announced it will launch a new midsize four-door electric pickup that will reach customers in 2027, featuring a $30,000 price tag. I'm just going to pull up on the screen their page from the announcement. So you can see the universal EV platform. So it's the first of a number of vehicles that will use this new Ford Universal electric vehicle platform, and it will be built in Louisville, Kentucky assembly plant. So Ford is investing $2 billion in the Louisville plant to introduce a new system for assembling these vehicles. They're calling that the Ford Universal EV production system. And I believe they're calling it like an unboxed situation, or maybe they're just, that was the Tesla term, I think, possibly. It's a similar thing. So it's designed to save significant manufacturing costs. The vehicle is produced in three separate sections, front, middle, and rear, of course, and will incorporate different strategies to reduce the parts count and manufacturing time. So it will feature a zonal architecture similar to Tesla and now Rivian, and I guess now to Volkswagen is getting into the zonal architecture via Rivian. So it'll have that, and as well as what they're calling unicasting, that's using large castings in place of welding many different small pieces together. They just cast a big aluminum piece, and that's a process that Tesla also incorporated a few years ago and refers to as gigacasting. So to keep the price low, it will have a small battery, possibly around 51 kilowatt hours, which sounds pretty undersized, but the Doug Field, Ford's top EV boss and a former Tesla guy, he said, being obsessive with efficiency will make its future EVs achieve a similar range as competitors with a battery that's up to one-third smaller. We can talk about how effective we think that might work out. Ford intends this to be a global vehicle, so its success is not completely dependent on U.S. sales and whatever's happening in the market here. But we haven't seen it yet at all, the truck. So it's hard to predict exactly how it will sell at this point. But Chris, so you're a big Ford guy, and you've been following this closely. What do you think of this plan?
You know, I'm excited for it. I listen to a lot of the quarterly calls, and they've always talked about the next generation platform had to be profitable within 18 months. And they also said that the current ways that EVs are built and the size of them and the battery packs and the just the structure of how they're assembled, that there was no way for them to make money. And I think for all these years of being out there, I've always said that their big thing was the ZEV credits, or not ZEV credits, but the CAFE credits. You know, they for every one of the quarterly calls, they said for every Lightning they sold, they could sell 17 highly profitable F-150s. So as long as you're not paying that money to Tesla, that's, you know, you don't have to make money on every truck. And then I think a lot of people confuse the idea of losing X amount of monies per truck with the money they've invested into all the stuff that we've just talked about now, which is, you know, they're doing Blue Oval City, they're doing the SK On partnership, they're doing the CATL partnership in Michigan, which will be the first one with the LFP batteries. They're talking about all the folks in Irvine with the Skunk Works that have been renting buildings before they recently opened. Our friends Patrick and Liv found that building out in Long Beach, the electric duo out there. They were also at this announcement, so shout out to them because they were one of the few that were in, you know, from the community in person there. And all of those things cost money. Out here, we have the Greenfield Labs out here in Palo Alto that I've been to in the Bay Area. That costs money. All those engineers. So those are investments into this platform that we're now seeing kicked off. And it, you know, it wasn't a product launch so much as manufacturing and kind of forward direction launch. And so it was exciting to see it. And I think, you know, that you'll notice there was a lot of glad handing of the politics, the local politicians, the UAW. You know, if you're fundamentally changing the structure of how you assemble something and at the same time losing 600 jobs in that efficiency process, you better have your UAW folks on board. And it's and a lot of that was, and it was funny because one of the most organic moments was when they talked about far fewer fasteners and air conditioning in the building, which I'm sure Patrick and Liv can talk about the heat in that building. You have to have that genuine enthusiasm of the assembly. So more than anything, you know, there wasn't this product release. It was more of like, look at how we're going to do it differently. And even within that, there wasn't a whole lot there that you hadn't seen before from others. But from a legacy OEM, that's transformational. So I'm obviously, as a fan, I hope they can execute. That's what it always is, right? You heard a lot of kind of those Tesla cues of like, you know, the best part is no part. The other one is, hey, we're making a bet. Now can we land the plane? There was a great quote from Jim Farley about, okay, we're going to get this thing up and flying, but can we land the plane? And, you know, Elon would say things like, prototyping is easy, manufacturing and scaling, that's hard. Okay, now it's the hard part, right? We knew the Model 3 had that, you know, production hell, right? Well, Ford's going to experience what that's like. I'm excited for it. There's a lot there to unfold now. And I can't wait to see what they produce. But profitability is huge. These are going to be American-made cars, American-made jobs. They're going to export them to the world. This will be a platform that theoretically can do that. I think they're targeting somewhere in the 100 and 150,000 scale. But, you know, we've heard that before from Lightning. So fingers crossed. And, you know, Ford will pivot if it doesn't work. But this platform should be something that has multiple iterations, you know, a Transit, a couple different SUVs. But they're going to start with the truck because Jim has always said the things that we do well are trucks, commercial, and enthusiast vehicles, right? Your Mustang GTDs, that's their bread and butter. So start with their strength, and that's what they're doing.
Right. So that was interesting. For some reason, I was thinking they wanted to say it was like going to be profitable right from the get-go, but they didn't actually say that. I think they're expecting to lose a bit of money at first, which kind of makes sense, you know. Being a global product, I think this is, I mean, it's just a way to get out of the box, right, with his first vehicle. So you can't expect a lot of profit, especially at that price point. You know, $30,000, that's a hard target to hit. So they're really pulling out all the stops to do that, including that tiny battery. Tom, what was your impressions of the event?
Well, first of all, I think Chris nailed it when he talked about the fact that they have to execute. Sounds great. You know, a lot of things sound great. Model E sounded great to me. You know, set pricing on websites, dealerships with charging equipment. you know, buying into selling electric vehicles, dealers making an investment so you know they're going to take it seriously and not just park all the EVs in the back corner of the parking lot and bury them. And when somebody comes in, say, yeah, you know, you don't want to bother with one of those. You know, Model E sounded great, but look what happened with that. So, and I'm not saying that Ford didn't try. They really did try, but the devil's always in the details and you have to execute. Sounds good. You know, they talked about it being a Model T moment. And, you know, I actually kind of like the fact that it was a philosophy and a process more than a vehicle, like than just showing us, look, here's our next Model T, you know, which you really can't repeat. The Model T could really almost can't be repeated. The fact that they're going into this new manufacturing process, they talked a lot about the tree, the assembly tree rather than an assembly line. I'm still not 100% sure how that is so revolutionary rather than having a straight line, having three branches. I don't know how it's necessarily going to save a lot of money. Nobody else has done this. Nobody else has decided that this is going to make them manufacturing better and save money. I did talk to Alan Clark about it, though, and he gave me a really long-winded answer. I want to take a look at it again. I just spoke with him yesterday at the recording and see exactly, try to pick apart exactly where he's talked about how that's going to save. You know, the platform is a good platform. I like the idea that it'll service all different types of vehicles. And while Ford only talked about this new, say, Ranger-sized electric pickup truck, I did ask Alan, I said, you know, that's the only vehicle you guys are talking about right now. But do you have other vehicles in development? Are you just going to go push forward with this and then, you know, see how it sells and then maybe move on to the second vehicle? And he said, oh, no, we have other electric vehicles, you know, in development. So, you know, that was good to hear. The zonal architecture, I think, is super important. I believe that's got to be the future of automobile manufacturing. It saves a ton of money. It reduces complexity. It saves weight, which, as we know, everything's so efficiency now. And, you know, it's going to save a lot of weight. They save over a mile of wire. I think Rivian said they eliminated 1.6 miles of wire from their vehicles. When you think about that, that's just, you know, that's nuts. It's like 8,000 linear feet of wire, you know, and that's a lot of weight and cost. So it's good. All the things that they talked about here was good. I'm not sweating the 30,000 mile price that much. Everybody's come out with prices. I can't imagine them nailing that when it comes. Maybe they will. Maybe we'll get lucky. We don't know what's going to happen. Something big's going to happen in the world like next year, and they're going to be like, well, because of that, this is now $34.99, you know, the base price with the small battery. They are going to have multiple battery sizes, I believe. So, you know, everyone's focused on talking about, well, maybe there's a 51 kilowatt, which is total guesswork at this point, but let's say there is. That would be the lowest price one. And, well, if you want the 93 kilowatt hour battery pack, that's 9 grand more or whatever. So, you know, there'll be longer range options, but I think if it can deliver, you know, with a 50 to 60 kilowatt hour battery pack, if it can deliver 200 miles of range, I think that will work for a lot of people. Because the truth is, We ask for way more range than what we need in many instances. And those small Ranger-sized pickup trucks rarely tow. I think Ford said, what was the percentage of Ranger? I forget what it was. It was like 10% or something like that of Ranger, current Ranger owners actually use it to tow. So, you know, that's not as important. It doesn't have to be everything for everybody. But if it's affordable, I think it will, you know, do well.
I think part of that idea of the Model T moment too is people think it's about, you know, this suddenly affordable car. And the Model T, when it first launched, it took a few years for it to become scaled and super affordable. The price came down, but if you know, it also wasn't the state of the art vehicle of the day. And so that's where, you know, last week, as you guys were talking about it and in the comments, I said, I frankly think some people will be disappointed when it launched within, you know, within this orbit, right, of folks, because it's going to be 400 volts, not 800. It's not going to be, you know, 0 to 60 in 3 seconds. It's not right. The model, I think people sometimes think it's going to be a class leader because they've seen what China does. It's about efficiency. It's about scale. It's about affordability for my neighbor, Bill. It's not my next truck. But if it can get my wife into something, she's wanted, you know, a Bronco Sport. And so if this platform, you know, the factory that it's going into used to do the Escape, and that Escape, the C2 platform, underpinned the Maverick, the Bronco Sport, and the Escape. Well, if you have a similar skateboard that can have a similar electrification of those vehicles, there, you know, the Maverick and the Escape are doing 100,000+ a year. You know, the Ranger does 50,000 a year. You know, those are scales that they can match and they can do in this factory, and they can be affordable for the everyday person. And I think that's more of what the Model T is. It's electrifying for the everyday person, which we badly needed. And Ford's not dumb. They're gonna do it in this one plant in Kentucky, right? And if it's a total failure and doesn't launch the way they hope, and they don't hit the 100,000+ vehicles they need, it's a factory among many. If it does work, now you scale it into all the other ones, Blue Oval, the ones in Michigan, the ones around the world. And so it's a smart play. And there's a lot of things, a lot of directions. Ford is known to pivot. Tom talks about what they had to do with the dealers. I think they learned from that too. And so a big part of this was, hey, we didn't get the dealers on board when we tried to transform how the company does business before. I think that was an awesome point by Tom. We better get UAW on board for this. And so I think a big part of that was the emphasis on that as well. So that tree structure, that efficiency of not having to lean into the car anymore, not having to get inside, you know, all of the way it's assembled, that's probably as much about UAW and efficiency and easier work environment than anything.
Right. Hey, Kyle's with us now. Hey, Kyle, how you doing?
Hey, guys, can you hear me all right?
Oh, yeah, okay. We hear you.
Awesome. Morning.
You're joining us from the road?
I'm on the road, yep, driving to North Carolina at the moment.
And what are you in?
In a Rivian.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll talk about that in a second, because people were asking, because you were spotted in Normal, Illinois yesterday, which is where Rivian is headquartered, and their main factory is there. And so people were asking what you're doing there. And so we can probably tell them in a minute, but I just wanted to, Tom, address your thing about the assembly plant. So instead of like a straight line where you start with the main frame and the body, and the two are kind of married at one point. And so this is like, they're producing it in three different sections. So you have your main middle line, but then it's your front and rear, or two of the other components are being assembled on the side lines, basically. So, yeah. And this means that they can, you know, they can get into, if you just have that section of the car, you can like walk around all around it. You can access it, you know, very differently without the lean into the car. So Ford had released some numbers here. So the platform reduces parts by 20%, 20%, 25% fewer fasteners, 40% fewer workstations dock to dock in the plant, and a 15% faster assembly time. So doing it this way allows them to cut down on a bunch of workstations, for one. So fewer people. And then also,
well, the
like
platform did that,
right?
Not the tree. I wasn't talking about the platform when I said I'd still like to see how the tree assembly system actually, you know, does, you know, save money and time. You know, that right. That's what I want. I wasn't talking about the platform itself.
Right. I mean, but that's kind of how it is. Like the platform is basically, I don't know how you'd even describe the platform at this point. It was all the three parts together. Mm-hmm. But they're all assembled separately and then brought together in a three-way yep. marriage.
Sounds a lot.
I know how they're going to do it. I want to see it in practice, working right. and actually saving, creating a compressed time with lower labor. You know, the same amount of functions need to be done.
If you remember right. Kyle's video when he was at the Lightning Factory, they kind of similarly do that with the Lightning. If you remember, he had a point where he was like, oh, that, you know, that there's the skateboard at the bottom that was on that piece, and here comes the chassis. Yeah. And he would be like, oh, that chassis is going to meet this skateboard. Yeah. And you could see it come together. I mean, that might be a two-part tree, and instead of in the future, you're going to have a front casting, a rear casting, a structural battery pack that's going to come together and then put that topper on. Yeah. But it's but yeah, like, it'll be interesting to see. We'll need another Kyle video and do another factory.
Yeah. I was at that factory three or four times, the where the Lightning's currently assembled. So I know exactly what you're talking about. I'm not saying it won't, it's not going to work. I'm just saying, I'm curious. I'd like to see how it's going to save time and whatever. You're still, you know, beholden to the, you know, the everything has to be timed right. You know, if one section of any of those three trees is held up, you're only going to be as fast as the slowest point of those three trees. You know, you can't have, you know, one line of the tree piling up cars while the third is taking longer. So we'll see how it works out. I'm not saying it won't work out. I'm just saying I'm curious to see how it saves time and effort, you know, time and money.
So what do you think about this $30,000 vehicle, Kyle?
Well, I think it's exciting. I think Ford gets it. It's like, you know, finally we see some of the existing American automakers go, holy smokes, we've got to make some radical changes here. And they seem to be doing it. They seem to get it. I'm really excited for this. 2027 is not that far away. So they definitely waited deep into the development cycle to announce this. It feels like the appropriate timing, assuming first deliveries do start within, you know, like 2027 model year. It's still gonna be 2 years away, I guess, if they go end of 27, but it's not that far of a wait. And I honestly, I don't know how Slate is gonna survive this.
Right. Yeah, it sounds like they might be a casualty of this this whole thing. They're still going. They're still, you know, it's like a hype machine over there at Slate. They got a fair amount of money, and they're spending a lot of it on just like getting that name out there, and a lot of marketing wraps for the prototype.
Yeah, I think Slate has to rely on the ability to hit a market that just doesn't want to buy a Ford. You know, people sometimes will say, like, how does anybody not buy a Tesla? And I'm like, man, a Tesla doesn't fit me. I love Tesla, but there's not a vehicle that I sit in that makes me feel anything like the Lightning. And, you know, someone's going to sit in a Ford and say, like, yeah, you know, 150,000 people own a Ford, whatever this is. You know, the Slate is unique. It's a little bespoke. You can customize it. You know, it can be a different kind of audience that gets the Slate, but they have to be able to make money in order to do it. You know, the Slate, I don't think they're going to compete head to head with this truck at 25 versus 30. If those numbers are real, you know, a lot of question marks about that for sure. But the way that you customize it, they had a couple shots of a Slate recently that reminded me a lot of like a Suzuki Samurai or that kind of, you know, fun. I remember those fun cars from back in the day, man. I used to love the little Suzuki Samurai, and you could do so much with it. So it's more for that crowd, I think. Different customers, you know?
I totally agree with that. Yeah, I like Chris is saying, there's an ass for every seat. And so I was just purely bringing up the fun idea of, well, there's some serious competition happening in this low-cost EV pickup space. And you know what? If they're truly 30 grand, I think they're going to be able to sell everyone that they can come up with.
I agree. And I think if Slate comes to market first, which is important, and the vehicle is a good vehicle. I mean, that's also super important. We don't know what Slate's capable of making. If it's a vehicle, people like it, and it's, you know, around the price range that they're telling us it's going to be and not the 1999. We know it's not going to be that. That was with incentives somewhere in the mid-20s or mid to upper 20s, and it's a good vehicle and people like it, they'll be fine. There's almost no limit to how many pickup trucks we could sell in the U.S. I'm sure there's a limit to how many electric pickup trucks at this point, but don't forget, we're going to be a couple of years down the road at that point. I think more people will be open to the possibility of electric vehicles. More and more people are every year. If both vehicles are good vehicles, they'll both be fine.
Yeah, I think Ford's big thing, I think, is that LFP. Producing their own LFP is important. Yeah. You know, Tesla's going to use LFP for energy storage, but Ford will be the first one to put it in a domestic automobile that they made in America. And that's where they're, you know, having to get the efficiencies, because they're not going to save it on the labor side. It's got to be that battery pack, that size, So yeah, I don't expect to see a giant battery, and that's where their money savings has to come from. And yeah, they need to sell it at volume. That's the key. Yeah, CATL, EVKX, that's their, they are making the battery, by the way. They're just licensing the IP and getting the training from CATL.
Yeah. It's almost not like a partnership. It's just a licensing agreement.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, it's not, CATL's not in their factory making the batteries with them. It's all Ford.
Yeah.
They just paid them to license their tech. And I think
Ford they'll have some
everybody to know that, you know, it's not a traditional partnership where the two of us got together and are making it. We're just saying, you've got great tech. Let us pay you for it and let us make it ourselves.
I think they'll have some CATL employees like helping set up the process and get them off the ground and everything. But
probably
over the long run, it's going to be, you know, it's Ford's thing.
Yeah. And those it's not like a Tesla Panasonic partnership, Dominic, where, you know, both companies are fully involved. So,
yep.
Right. And these are prismatic cells. So that's part of the cost feature. So they can make with prismatic cells, they're like Lego blocks basically. And I think it's going to be easier and cheaper to assemble once with those things made like that. And also alter the size of the battery packs as well. You know, if they want to take it a few modules, I think it's a low cost way of doing it. But as some people saying there will probably be bigger battery options. And I've seen people talking about different chemistries as well. So we don't know if they'll have like a nickel based battery chemistry as well, but I think possibility.
They will for the longer range versions.
Yeah. It doesn't make sense to put all your money in like that small of a, because I'm thinking, you know, like in the 50, 60 kilowatt hour range, it'll get what, like 200 miles, you know, or so a little bit. I think people will want to spend a bit more money on and get pay for a bigger battery and pay for more range. And so why not address that market as well?
Yeah. And I think there was Larry that chimed in and said, man, they're 2 years from now, they're going to launch this thing with LFP and they'll be behind, but that's okay. They're not looking to be the bleeding edge of the technology. They're looking to be reliable, safe. They're looking to be affordable. And then they'll pivot. They've got the kind of scale and money that when the new technology is proven out and borne out, they'll pivot to that technology, you know, but the point isn't to be bleeding edge.
Okay. So I just pulled up this comment from Electric Duo. So nope, they said the truck will only have LFP. I'm wrong there. I thought that I had read that the longer range versions would have different chemistry. So
I think that's more Blue Oval City. I think when you start looking at the T3 or what will eventually come out of Tennessee, that those aren't, you know, that they've said when they commercialize or, you know, the future of possible series hybrid, you know, they're going to, that's the other thing. I think this is the first kind of dipping of their toe into a platform that'll have multiple things on one skateboard. But eventually I think the software stuff that Doug Field and all those guys are working on, it'll find its way into, you know, the future F-150s and the future lineup. I think if this works the way they hope it to work, you know, you'll see Blue Oval City. They'll have, you know, a drivetrain that's electric. They'll have a drivetrain that's series hybrid. They'll have a drivetrain that is diesel and gas. And all of that will underpin a skateboard for all the drivetrains. All of it will be the Ford digital experience. All, you know, this is, I think, the first dipping of the toe into that direction.
People are also talking about the it's going to be like a 400. Oh, thanks for that Electric Duo, by the way, too. I had no idea. I saw the speculation of the nickel-based batteries, but interesting that they only LFP. And you mentioned earlier too, I didn't get to highlight the comment, it disappeared on me, but only one trim. It's not going to be a bunch of different trims. This is the truck, I guess. And so did they mention like a larger battery option? They said the platform was EV only to start. Okay. Yeah. Right. So earlier too, people were talking about the you know, 400 volts versus 800 volts, you know, situation. And this is, you know, a low cost focused vehicle. So 400 volts and charging might be a little bit slower, but that's people want, you know, the low costs. That's what you got to do to get the low costs, I guess, at this point.
I mean, Dominic, charging may not be slower. So on the smaller the battery pack, the less you need high voltage in order to reach the maximum of the cell's capabilities. So you still always have the limit of what the cell can do. and you probably can reach that much quicker. You definitely can reach that much quicker with a small battery if it's a 400 volt system architecture. Because keep in mind, you can still easily and reliable hit well over 200 kilowatts with a 400 volt system architecture, as long as it's a high 400 volt. Like if you're like 380 dead and 450 full, which would be like a Rivian pack, you're doing 220 kilowatts. That's a 400 volt system architecture. That would be around 4C charging on this particular car. You just don't need higher voltage the smaller the application.
Okay. Thanks for that. Krita is saying 800 volts can be cheaper if it saves on wiring and materials, depending on supplier and scale. But I know you would say some on wiring, but I believe the inverters and motors for 800 volts are more expensive. Do you know exactly what that is, Kyle? Just the more expensive components, basically?
More expensive componentry, although it's coming down, still clearly 400 volt is the cheaper way to go for it.
Right.
Ultimately, I think we'll always have 400 volt EVs, especially smaller ones. There's going to be cheap, reliable, ubiquitous equipment out there for them. And that's still pretty high voltage. Like you don't really need to go above that unless we're talking about big flagship, long range, fast charging vehicles. If you're just going for an everyday commuter type product, then lower voltage is totally fine. And the efficiency benefits while driving really won't be seen all that much.
Right. So, anything else anybody want to say about the Ford
Well, we're talking
thing?
about the battery size. I know, we're talking about 51 kilowatt hour, and I know the Mach-E vlog mentioned that, Ford never said that, and they're right. They never said that, but what they did say was they were aiming for a battery that's approximately 15% smaller than the BYD Atto electric crossover. And the Atto has, I think it's 60.5 kilowatt hour usable battery pack. So if you deduct the 15%, that's where you come up with the 51 kilowatt hour usable. So that's where why that number's being floated around, because Ford said we're aiming for about 15% less than the BYD Atto. So that's, if they're what they're saying is true, that that's what they're aiming for, then we're right at slightly more than 50 kilowatt hour usable.
Right. One other thing, I guess we didn't really address the size either, is the size. So Ford calls it like a mid-size vehicle all the time, and but they call their Maverick a compact truck. Like under Ford Materials, I went and checked it out, but then they're also saying this is about the same footprint as the Maverick. So it's a
So
very compact mid-size.
The way it was described is more interior space than a RAV4, which
right.
the Maverick, it's if you sit inside of a Maverick, it feels bigger than a Ranger inside because of the
It is
unibody.
bigger than a Ranger inside. It's
Yeah.
got more passenger. That's the other thing I was going to say. So they said that, right? It's going to
Yeah.
have more interior space than the RAV4. The Maverick already has more space, interior space than the RAV4. It's got like 100.3 cubic feet of passenger space, and which is more than the Ranger actually, for somehow. I don't know, what the magic is, but I guess they're going to carry that same magic over to this vehicle as well.
That was my takeaway. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. See, anything else? Do you want to talk about the Ford? Anybody out there in the audience have something they want to bring up? Looking at the
Well, just
comments.
from my perspective, I think Ford did honestly a pretty bad job communicating this. This was
Okay.
such a big occasion for them, and they've left us with so many questions. If anything, I think if you're going to make an announcement about a new platform, you need to have some more solid information for everyone to go off of. I know they have a plan. They have a very strong communications team. They're great people. Some of them are friends of mine. I just think if you are going to do something like this, you've got to tell everyone what the heck you're actually building. And I'm sure we'll find out at some point soon, right? But it just feels like a very odd way to go about launching a new era of the company.
Did you want to see a picture of the vehicle? Is that it?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, don't really need to see a picture of the vehicle. I just want to know some specs on what they're using. The fact that we're having to speculate on battery capacity is crazy.
True. True. Yeah, that's good. I don't know why you'd want to hold that back, really, or you just throw it out there as a straight number or neighborhood, rather than mention BYD at 03, which nobody in North America really knows anyway, right?
No one here knows that car. It's extremely popular in other parts of the world, but it's also a very unimpressive car. Like, it's just a kind of generic electric SUV. It's not anything great.
I think Ford feels burned sometimes by, and they're such a conservative company, man. They do not like to be out there in front of something. They want to be able to pivot and adjust. And I think, you know, going back a couple years, there was once a time when they got a bunch of us together and said, you know, the new Blue Cruise will be out by the end of the year. And like a year and a half later, even today, some people are still waiting on Blue Cruise 1.4. And I think that kind of thing haunts them. You know, they were, you know, the Ford, we're going to go three shifts. We're going to get, you know, the Lightning's going to be 100,000. That didn't happen. Hey, T3 is going to be coming. That had to pivot. Blue Oval's going to be this thing. It's been pushed back. I think they feel burned by each one of these. And they're like, we're not going to say something until we need to say something. Their strategy in general kind of mirrors what they've done, even with their battery pack. You know, they put extra buffer in there. They put their communication is like their battery pack. It's got some extra buffer. It's got so they want to be conservative. They want to be safe. Blue Cruise, same thing. You know, there's Blue Cruise had been out there being tested amongst Ford employees, but they're so conservative with releasing it. Their OTA updates. This is where legacy Ford still reflects legacy mentality as opposed to the, you know, the bleeding edge companies. So that's why they had to skunk works things, because if they worked this project the way they work everything else, it would take forever. It kind of, I would say, is on brand as much as it's frustrating.
Yeah, but I don't think it's just legacy Ford, Chris. It's legacy auto. You know, the legacy brands, and they hate when we call them that. You know, they're like ruled by their lawyers. I mean, everything has to go through, you know, dozens and dozens of levels of approvals, and then the attorneys have to get involved. That's what you don't really have as much with a Tesla, a Rivian, a Lucid, where they can pivot quickly. They can, you know, make decisions without it taking 3 months to go through legal and everything. So, you know, I think that's the legacy brands have gone through these iterations over the last 100 years of, you know, iteration after iteration after, and layers of management have been added and added and added. And, you know, I mean, remember Ford v Ferrari movie, you know, how, and that was even back then that, you know, that Shelby was so, you know, frustrated with the, you know, bureaucracy, and that, imagine how much worse it is now. So yeah, it's not just Ford, but to defend Ford a little bit, as far as saying, you know, that they're beholden to this, you know, the legacy, you know, albatross. Ford's a company that came out and said that we're going to pivot to NACS, essentially changing the course of automobile industry, period. I mean, once they opened that door, everybody had to do it. So that was kind of, you know, forward thinking, or, you know, ballsy of them to do. They also came out with the Model E, which it failed, but they tried. You know, they tried to literally have like a set pricing that was established on websites, you know, for their EVs. They tried, you know, it didn't work, but they tried. And now they're doing this. So they are, while they are a legacy brand, they are certainly trying to kind of break from that mold and be like, you know, relevant and new, and being able to move and pivot quickly.
Yeah, I think their employee pricing was as close as they ever got to being able to get, you know, they got a little taste of it with employee pricing. Like, all right, this is where we're going to be. And that's as close as we ever got to that moment.
Yeah. It's a shame that Model E wasn't able to really come to fruition. You know, seamless online purchasing, deliver the vehicle to your house. Anytime you need service, they come and pick it. I mean, there were so many aspects of that people like about, let's say, a Tesla. You know, how the Tesla experience can be, you know, while still having the dealerships for people that want to go there. I thought it was a very good mixture. It's just unfortunate that in this country, the dealer lobby is so strong. It's nearly impossible to break its back. And they just overwhelmed Ford with lawsuits. And Ford just said, you know, we're fighting every lawsuits in nearly every state. And, you know, this is a battle we can't win, but they tried, and I got to give them credit for that.
Yep.
Right on. Anything else anybody want to add?
Love the Ford coverage. That's probably as much as we can do on Ford.
I mean, it's an interesting, you know, I think they've done what they really needed to do. I mean, they've just had a hard go of it. You know, it seems like they've made a lot of decent announcements and done a lot of decent things, but then, you know, I feel like the market kind of failed them at some level, you know, really like the F-150 Lightning. Tom and Chris, you both drive them. They should be selling, you know, a couple hundred thousand of those a year. I feel like it's good enough for that. And I just feel like there's a lot of truck owners out there who don't really understand that it would be their favorite vehicle ever if they, you know, made that jump. And I don't know if that's a communications failure or what, or just
cost.
Yeah. But
cost. Yeah. Cost is number one factor, Dom. You know,
yep.
There's a lot of FUD out there too that scared people.
True.
Because I run into people in parking lots all the time. Chris, you probably do also. But I'm in a Home Depot and places, and they come up to like, oh, that's the electric one, right? You know, how do you like it? And I, you know, tell them how I'm happy with it. And they're like, yeah, I just saw so much about people saying it can't tow, and in the winter the battery dies, and I just didn't want to take a chance with it. So you can't underestimate the influence of the FUD, of how that the bad information went out. Now, it's all rooted in some truths. Like, it doesn't tow nearly as good as a combustion vehicle will. I mean, physically it can tow great, but the recharging process is super cumbersome, and I wouldn't recommend somebody that tows frequently long distances to get it. But that's, you know, a percentage of owners. There is an enormous percentage of F-150 combustion vehicle owners today, an enormous percentage of them that would be perfectly happy with a Lightning, but they're afraid to do it because they've heard a lot of bad stuff and the price is more expensive. You know, and Ford enthusiast says here, if I could afford one, I would have one. Man, look at the used prices. Don't be afraid about getting used in the used F-150 Lightnings. We could talk to Brandon about that. He might be in the comment section now. He got a ridiculous deal on a used Lariat, but you know, it's a great vehicle. I love it, man. And I know Chris loves his, and I've had mine for 3 years now. It's one of my favorite, if not my favorite, electric vehicles. And I've driven them all. So, right. You know, it should, you know, you're right, Dom. There should be more Lightnings in more people's driveways. They'd be very happy with them.
I like this comment by Cicero. He says that the F-150 was the right product with the wrong customer base. And I kind of feel like there's a good bit of truth to that. But we should move on, I guess. Yeah. So while we're on the subject of Ford, just real quick, I wanted to mention that this video that was making the rounds yesterday of a green Ford Mustang Mach-E going down a California highway, like slammed up against the concrete barrier and then making a hard right when the barrier ended and taking out another car. So there was all kinds of speculation and, you know, autonomous car or Blue Cruise. You know, just people, you know, just making up stories about what happened. But according to the police report, I just wanted to like set up the record straight here. According to the police report, it was determined that the vehicle was not operating in autonomous mode, and CHP officers arrested the driver on suspicion of driving under the influence. And I believe Kyle posted shared this on socials and mentioned drugs, maybe.
I mean, just look at what's going on there. That it's so obvious.
Welcome to the Bay Area.
Right. I didn't look, I didn't really see him, but I guess people like Kyle, you said he was praying.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what the dude was doing. He was all tripped out. Who knows? This is just a real problem. And, thank God no one got hurt. That's the, good news at the end of the day. But like the Tesla people sharing around like, oh, Ford Blue Cruise, like there's no indication of that being on driver assistance. Also, like whenever the same people, whenever someone swerves in a Tesla to avoid something, they're like, look at what FSD did. It's like, holy smokes, let's just use our brains here. And humans are good or terrible drivers. This is so annoying. I hate it. Anyway, clearly drugs. I settled the case yesterday. You didn't even need to wait for the police report. It's all good.
All right. Well, I just wanted to do like an official word. Not that yours isn't good enough, but anyway, I just thought I'd throw that up there because it's everywhere right now.
Yeah,
and it just didn't add up that he couldn't stop it. Like, you know, it just didn't add up. You know, when you see the guy, like you said, with his hands up in the air going like this, it's like, I mean, when I looked at that, I initially thought the same thing, that the guy's whacked out on something. And I said, maybe he's just so upset and panicked that he doesn't know what to do. Like, you know what I mean? Because, you know, that was the only sliver of a chance I gave him of it not being his fault. Maybe he's just so freaked out by what's going on that, like, his hands are just shaking in the air. But it definitely appeared as though he was not of right mind. So.
Yeah, and unfortunately, right. 8 million people view that thing, and then, yeah. you know, a few hundred thousand get to see the response back. Yeah. And right. the guy that did the video out here in the Bay Area, he's in my TikTok orbit. Weird to say that I even have a TikTok orbit. But he stopped and he checked on both drivers, and I asked him, I was like, would you see? And I posted his response back to me, and he's like, yeah, the guy's eyes were all crazy, and he never once mentioned anything wrong with the vehicle, and people would be like, oh, he was probably in shock and the airbag hitting in his face. I'm like, yeah, but I think of every fender bender that I've ever been in. I think of when Tom got his car hit, right? Yeah. Regardless of the situation, the first thing you do is you start accusing or defending or explaining. If his car was going crazy, he'd have said something, and he didn't. And so it's right away, my red flag was up. And then, the CHP out there in Redwood City right next to San Carlos released that, DUI. And people think DUI is alcohol. DUI can be anything under the influence of. So, it's just unfortunate that 8 million people see that and then turn around, and so few are going to see the truth. And that'll get used for years, man. We'll hear about this for years.
And somehow it becomes a Ford or an electric vehicle issue.
Yep.
not a drug problem. It's, you know, it's look at what happens with these electric cars. They take off on their own. You can't stop them.
Yeah.
There was a lot of that already.
Yeah, I know.
But we should move on, because there's still a bunch to talk about here today, if you don't mind. So let's get this other big story out of the way as well. We don't need to spend a lot of time on it because there's still not a whole lot of information about it. But the new Acura RSX prototype is debuting today at Monterey Car Week. And I'm just going to bring the video up here on the screen and share that so y'all can see. This is kind of it. All right. So they call it a prototype. And so it's not exactly production intent, but I think it's pretty close. It's basically what the car will look like, and it comes a year after the reveal of the Acura Performance EV concept, upon which this was kind of based. And the concept actually looks pretty close to this as well. It wasn't like a crazy far out there kind of concept. And it's a pretty short little video they have here as well. So the Acura sold an RSX from 2002 to 2006, and that car was a coupe, kind of replaced the Integra from the 90s. This new vehicle is meant to be sporty as well. It's a crossover SUV, as you can see on the screen. It's the first vehicle to sit on Honda's global EV platform, and it's going to be produced at the Honda EV Hub in Ohio. So there's still a ton we don't know about the car, like any of the performance metrics. We don't know. Well, we do know it will be the first vehicle to use ASIMO OS. So that's an operating system named after a humanoid robot that the Honda made developed from 2000 to 2018, I think. I kind of missed the little Honda robot. So the other main takeaways from the initial press release, at least, is that it will feature a double wishbone front suspension, have vehicle to load, so it can power off-board devices. And see, Tom, so after making the Honda E, which we didn't get in the US, and the Prologue, which is basically a badge-engineered Chevrolet, Honda is finally producing its own platform. So it's pretty early days. We don't have a lot of info, but what do you think of Honda bringing this out ahead of its Zero Series, of Acura bringing this out ahead of the Honda Zero Series vehicles that will share the same platform?
You know, it's hard to get excited about. What I'm excited about is that Honda's finally going to be bringing a fully engineered electric vehicle that they did in-house to market. You know, that's with their own platform and everything. So I think that's the big news here. It looks okay. You know, I think it looks okay. You know, it's hard to say. Concepts are always look sexy. I'm sure it's going to be toned down a little bit. It's probably pretty close. Looks pretty close to production, but I bet you there'll be some small changes. You know, I can't get excited about it. It's, you know, okay, it's another, you know, crossover in this space, another option, which is great. These are the vehicles that people want to drive. It kind of looks a little like Lotus to me, and also Polestar, kind of Polestar 7, Lotus mixture. But, you know, there's so many vehicles in this space now, it's hard to not bring something that looks like something else to market. So good for Honda and Acura. And, you know, let's see the final version of this thing and the specs, really. That's obviously the most important thing.
Yeah, not a whole lot about the specs. What did you think, Kyle, of this thing? You're not at a Monterey car week this week.
This seems like something that should have launched 7 years ago.
Oh, wow. So that's a spicy take.
Just reminds me of when Mach-E launched, and it's, you know, used to be a two-door. You know, Mustang is supposed to be a two-door. This is supposed to be a two-door. Here's a four-door. It's another segment in that Mach-E tradition of just ubiquitous things that they call SUVs that aren't SUVs. And I think Tom nailed it with, it's just, hey, Honda's going to get in the game. Awesome. Yeah. Thanks for coming.
That's the big news to me. You know, finally, yep. You know, get a fully engineered platform, you know, for electric vehicles. And that's great. Let's see what it looks like when it's finally presented, and let's see what the specs are. You know, there's Honda has a lot of loyal buyers, you know, Honda and Acura. So, I mean, we see that with the, you know, with the Prologue. It's doing extremely well. The ZDX is doing better of late too. And, you know, that wasn't necessarily because people said they want an electric crossover. I think it's loyal Honda customers that went to their dealership, their lease is up, and this was presented, and it had a good lease, had a good lease rate. So they're like, yeah, I'll try the electric thing. So, you know, this will get more people in EVs. The loyal Honda and Acura people will seek this out. I don't think it's going to be a big conquest vehicle, because it, you know, but who knows? Let's see what the specs are. It's hard to speculate.
Right. Yeah. It's kind of early days at this point, basically. And there's not really a whole lot we can even talk about it. So I vote we move on, really.
If you've seen one video about it, you've seen them all, because they're all in the front of that same background. None of them can get inside. They all say the same thing. You just need to watch one 10-minute video and you've got everything you need.
Right. But yeah, it's about time they finally had their own platform. I mean, I guess we could say that's kind of par for the course. Is like if Ford's really kind of, Ford's had their Mach-E platform, I guess, but really digging in with a multi-model, you know, kind of like platform like this is kind of, it's late, but I guess better late than never, I guess. I don't know. I guess we'll see too. But like you're saying, people do like Hondas, and they're picking up that Prologue pretty well. I keep seeing them around town in Tallahassee, which is, I feel like my town's a little bit slow on the adoption curve. And so when I see a bunch of, you know, I see more Prologues than I think I see like Hyundai Ioniqs in this town.
I think the Prologue is a great lesson in the marketplace. I mean, people love their Hondas. They see the Honda badge. It has nothing to do with Honda. It's probably one of the most boring, basic EVs out there, but it fulfills a great purpose, and it's a great little EV. It does everything that most people need. It does it at an affordable price with a trusted brand. Now it's going to be their own actual product. I think it'll do well for, you know, in their, like Tom was saying, it's not a conquest vehicle. It's hey, more butts in seats, more EVs. That's awesome.
Right.
I think this thing's going to be 70 grand.
Ooh. I mean, that probably, I guess. I mean, you'd hope for, it's going to be, well, over 50 for sure.
I think the only guarantee is it's going to be priced far too high and have far too terrible specs. That's probably the only guarantee.
Yeah.
So like the Afila, basically.
I think it's got to be worse than the Afila. If that's their flagship, then it's got to be worse than that.
True. Yeah. I think the Afila is like 90,000, and I don't know if it even has the features that the Acura will have. But yeah, but moving on, We should just move on, I think. So, Chris, I wanted to circle back to you just a little bit, and just so our audience, because it's the first time you're joining us today, and I wanted to let the audience learn more about you. So, how did you get into EVs anyway?
Spite. I got into it because of spite. There was the time after, the early 2000s after 9/11, where I just looked at where the money was going for things and oil. And I out here in California, it's a great example that people don't know. California used to have 30 oil refineries, and now it's down to like 9. And there's 2 more. They're going to be closing here by the next year or so. And people think that because we drill so much and we produce so much oil that all this stuff's being used. A lot of that's exported because oil, a lot of our refineries were built at a time where we have to refine foreign oil. It's not all oil is the same. There's heavy crude, light crude. A lot of what we get out of the ground in America isn't used for transportation. And I'm not one to say I'm saving the environment or saving the world. I mean, I just took a plane across the world to Amsterdam and Norway and then got on a boat for 7 days. I'm not saving the environment, right? I want oil to be used for where it's best used, which is, the roads and the products and the things that are material things that actually exist that maybe you can recycle, and let's not burn them for our vehicles and our homes. So I'm a big fan of, started with solar and then got into electric. And, I've driven, the Ranger and the F-150 before that. My wife owns an Edge. I reserved the Cybertruck, but it didn't deliver on time or at the price. Ford came out. I was like, man, I've owned F-150s. It's a perfect vehicle for me. And I got into it. And early on in the F-150 forums, read everything I could about it and got connected. Sergio Lifgif, reached out to me, and he was a trusted person that I would get information from. And he was like, why don't you just ask that to Ford directly? And he connected me with Emma Berg, invited me to CES. And that's where I met, Patrick and Liv and F the Pump, Will, and I didn't know anything about X at all, other than it was where I got my sports information. And and then it just got me into the community. I was the first one to get a Lightning off my dealer lot. I had the relationship because of the Ranger, the F-150, my wife's Edge, and then with FedEx, a lot of our Econoline vans and our Transit Connects and all of that. I had my fleet account, so I got the first truck and I got it at MSRP. In fact, they offered me $10,000 to surrender it, to just walk away. Yeah, it was a crazy time. So I got the truck, and then, I got into YouTube out of laziness, because I would post about it and I didn't want to keep uploading to different platforms. So I could just upload one LinkedIn video and then share the link. I got into the whole community and started going to EV events, and I found it compelling with a lot of great people. And I love the technology, and I'm about the community more than anything. Although I drive a Lightning because it's right for me and because I love the vehicle. I'm not one of those people that's, I like to say I'm an enthusiast, not an evangelical. I volunteer with a nonprofit out here that does EV community outreach and, does education on it. I love all that kind of stuff. My first EV event was with Tesla Owners Club, San Joaquin Valley, Joe, shout out to him. He kind of was almost like the godfather that embraced me and said, no, this guy's okay. He's one of the family. And that got me into Tesla Owners Club East Bay. And then eventually that got me with John. Once I was kind of endorsed by, the other clubs and by Sergio, that got me with John from Tesla Owners Club Silicon Valley. He let me get with his Cybertruck when he got it delivered. That video got me 120,000 views and monetized my channel. And that's kind of where all that platformed from. But it's, the whole purpose of it was to save money. I got solar 8 years ago. It's paid for. I pay nothing for my house electrical. I pay nothing for my Lightning. I mean, it's zero. And that for me in California, that works, but again, I'm not someone that's like, you must do this, because I've done the math on friends from Texas and people from the Northeast, and the math doesn't pencil out because their energy cost is different and the snow and the cold and all these other factors. So I look for if I can make it make sense to somebody and simplify it, because I'm not that bright a guy. So if I can simplify something and be like, this makes sense, then I like to help people understand it better too. And that's what got me into it.
Right on. Hey, so just real quickly, so you mentioned you were in Europe just recently. So you've been into EVs for a few years now and owning one, but you just went over to Europe, but they have a whole bunch more EVs that we don't have here. You were in Amsterdam, and then you took a train. up to Norway, I'm thinking. You met William from Out of Spec, actually. Up
there. I did. Yeah, that was such a privilege, man. That was so cool. He was great. The guy is crazy, first of all. He took me, went all the way to Oslo, got a Zeeker. So I had first visited the Amsterdam showroom for Zeeker, and I did a video for that. That's on Out of Spec Bits. Everybody go watch that, because Kyle will never let me do a video again. It's only got 2,000 views. So, yeah, Kyle's never going to let me back on again. He's like, that video did terrible. Everybody go watch it, like it, pump my numbers.
I'll let you do other videos, but we got to choose some better topics.
Yeah, that was not a success. And so I got to see him in the showroom, but they wouldn't let me test drive. They wouldn't let an American out on the streets of Amsterdam with it. So then I took a cruise ship up to Norway and did a 7-day on the west side, but it didn't go to Bergen or Oslo or those places where the big, you know, areas are. It was out in the fjords. So William goes all the way to Oslo, gets a Zeeker. He's like, hey, I'll let you drive it. Drove for 14 hours to get the Zeeker and then drive all the way to the west coast of Norway. Picked me up at the cruise ship and we spent a day, and that video's coming, and that was a fun video. I got to drive it down like the longest, deepest tunnel in the world. Went and visited a bunch of different charging stops, got to see a ton of vehicles that I've never seen before. Got to just really get a feel for it. It's a lot of fun. I hope people enjoy it when it comes out, and I hope they watch more of that than they watched of the Zeeker showroom, that's for sure.
Right. Is that coming out on your channel?
No, that's going to be on see, Kyle didn't know how bad the first one was going to do, so I think that's going to appear on Bits. So hopefully I'll get some redemption on the second video.
Well, that sounds good. Like, I'm looking forward to watching it. That'll be fun.
Yeah, that was a blast.
That sounds great. So what did you think of the Zeeker real quick, just briefly?
It did 375 kilowatts, and it held like well over 200 deep into like 80%. It was crazy. It's not that golden battery or whatever, right? But that battery was strong, and it was and William does a whole cool part where we're at a charger, Alpatronic HYC 400s, and shout out Brandon Flash in the Alpatronic, by the way. And he was showing me how he has there's two different cables on two different Alpatronics, and one delivers more power than the other. All that kind of stuff was fun. The interior of it was great. This was the high spec, so it had air suspension. Everything was soft touch. It was really fascinating. So everything's brought to another level with those Chinese cars. It was cool to see Skoda. It was cool to see the curbside charging. It was cool to see BYDs. I mean, God, I could spend another week out there checking that stuff out. And what really struck me was how easy it was just to go from country to country. And just to see the mix of charging infrastructure. We saw ChemPower, we saw Alpatronic, we saw so many different, you know, he took me to like a grocery store area where they had 75 kilowatt chargers. They have a lot of Nissan Leafs still out there. Chatamo, I didn't realize Chatamo was a thing in Europe. So, it was pretty incredible. I think it gave me perspective about just how far behind we are in so many ways. And I think they have the advantage of that 240 volt charging on the curbside everywhere. That's their base voltage. That's
right.
I don't think that can be underestimated with what a big deal that is.
Yeah. That's like 20 kilowatts basically, right?
Yeah.
AC charging. It's like, that's a fat amount of power coming in.
Yeah. I spent time with my brother-in-law is from the Netherlands. And so we went and spent time at just a local grocery store and doing that kind of stuff. And I posted some shorts on my channel of some of those moments. And every grocery store we went to had these bring your own cable chargers. Every neighborhood had bring your own cable. Even in Amsterdam itself, along the canals, bring your own cable infrastructure right there in these 700-year-old cobblestone streets. It was definitely a different mindset.
Right on. Well, thanks for sharing that. And we'll look forward to that video. We'll try to mention it on the show when it comes out. So Kyle, you've done some pretty awesome things since we saw you last week. I wanted to get into your adventures with the robotaxis, but you mentioned a friend of yours had an issue with dog mode that you thought was important to talk about. So I can pull that up right now while you tell us what that was about and what people should do or look out for.
Right. Well, you know, I think, first of all, the day yesterday started with Jordan and Scott texting me laughing about how they're in the new Subaru Solterra, you know, presentation to the media. And there's like four slides dedicated to how Subaru is the best dog car. And it's like, we have more pet owners than anyone else. And, you know, I guess Scott's like, oh, well, how does your dog mode work? And they're like, oh, we don't have dog mode. And it's like just totally not in sync with what people actually want out of their vehicles. Great. So then later on in the day, I'm sitting on a plane and my phone starts going with these critical notifications that you can see here that are pushing through my like, hey, I'm staying silent mode. And basically, yeah, Drew's Model 3 started creeping up in temperature, even though it was set in dog mode with the AC blasting. So there was a malfunction, the condenser iced over, something happened where the car could no longer maintain temperature. And it wasn't like climate had just shut off. The car was doing everything it could to stay cool, and there was an actual issue with cooling the cabin. And so Tesla was pushing these big notifications every 1 minute. And I thought it was so great. And, you know, the thing is, Drew and Alice, they were in a meeting. They didn't have their phones with them. So we could tell that they had no idea what was going on because we tried to call them. You know, Scott was calling them. We're like, we can't get a hold of them. And Ruby's in the car. So I was able to at least vent the windows and then also unlock the car. And then we were going to have one of our friends. It was right near their house. We called them. We're like, hey, can you just run over and get Ruby out of there? And that was really cool. Unfortunately, they weren't home. So right as we were about to call the police to go over, because the temperature was getting to be about, you know, 100 degrees in the car, and those temperature sensors aren't totally accurate. I'm sure it was pretty toasty. And then they finally saw their phones and ran out to the car and got Ruby. But it's still pretty cool integration there. One other thing we should say is with Rivian, they also, one time I had the air conditioning system fault. Actually, the whole truck faulted while charging in dog mode. And not only it didn't, I think this was before critical notifications. This was a couple of years ago. It was actually texting me and said, hey, your vehicle has a fault. It was in dog mode. You should go back out to it. And so those types of features are something you just don't see, but I think it's as critical as a feature like that and critical in, you know, working at normal situations.
Oh, you went a little bit robot on us that last little bit. Oh, now we can't hear you. He might still be talking. Okay, he was there for a second. So you went robot on us for a bit, and then you dropped off completely there, Kyle.
But, oh yeah, heard you just fine. But you got the gist of it.
Yes. All right. So yeah. Okay. Let's move on then, real quick. Yes, you were in Austin to drive the robo taxi. So yeah, Tesla started this robo taxi service in Austin a few weeks back. So you went down to see how well they work and compare them with Waymo, which has had driverless taxis in a few cities for a few years now. So you have one video up now about riding in a Tesla Model Y for quite a while. It was quite a trip, I guess. But there are more coming, including one maybe with a race. Between Tesla and Waymo. So I don't know if you want to get into all of that right now, but at least I wanted to hear about the long ride that you took in that first video.
Right. Well, the first video wasn't the long ride. We ended up doing a few hour ride later on in our experience. That video hasn't gone up yet because we wanted to run it out of charge and see what happens. So we just kept changing our drop-off point until we ran out. And we didn't end up running out, but it was really funny to see Tesla's reaction to that. It was a great experience. You know, we went down, first of all, like I think a lot of us have experienced the newest versions of FSD. And I think most of us would probably agree it's pretty incredible. It's pretty great, but it is not a replacement for a human driver. You still need to stay supervised. It still messes up from time to time. You know, I've had it where it'll just blow through a red light sometimes. Like it's ready for, I think, to experience and to use it safely with a monitor behind the wheel. But I was like, there's no way they're doing driverless cars with this stuff. And then they were. So we went down, we got an invite from Tesla to go check it out. And I got to tell you, it's different software than we have on our cars. And it's awesome. It's not to say it's perfect, but that first video that we put up really shows, you know, what's at least possible. And it was reality. It worked for us. What's funny is that every video coming after this, it messed up a little bit. Nothing safety, actually, nothing functionally like, oh, it pulled out in front of a car or it did something weird. It was all more pickup and drop off issues that happened with just like the logistics of running a rideshare service. So that stuff they still need to dial in. I don't think it's going to be that difficult. We got stuck in an infinite loop one time where it kept missing the turn for our drop off and it would go around the block and we're like going around and around and around. And I thought it was the funniest thing ever. It was great. So anyway, we had a blast. We had so much fun. The biggest takeaway for me, you'll see it in the upcoming video, is how much smoother of a ride and software the Tesla is than Waymo. And I'm a huge Waymo guy. I love Waymoing around. And Tesla has a better driving profile than Waymo does. It's very impressively smooth.
Like the dynamics of the ride, basically.
Yeah, like all the steering, the throttle, the brakes, like Waymo sometimes just jerks the wheel randomly or like does some awkward stuff. The Tesla was just deliberate and silky smooth. And you know what's funny is Tesla keeps saying they gather training data from Tesla drivers, but clearly they're not, because Tesla drivers are among the worst drivers on the road. They are the opposite of smooth or anything. So they're clearly lying about how they're training these cars, but it's awesome.
Okay. So we see on the screen now, it actually pulled into the place where you called it to pick you up. Is this kind of where you expected it to go?
Yeah,
you
that's
can see
exactly
your
where
location
we
on your app,
pin.
Right?
Yeah, okay. we told it exactly where to go. Some other rides were a little bit buggier. But in general, like, it was fun to play around with. Clearly, it's early access. It's beta. It's not dialed in. It's meant for testing. And that's why we went and spent a day riding. We rode for like 12 hours nonstop. Waymo and Tesla. And you know what? I hate Ubering, but I really enjoyed this. It was really fun.
Right. So you were talking about it kind of falling down a little bit during like drop off. So it kind of wanted to drop you. It didn't really pull over the side of the road. Is that what you're saying?
Well, there's so many little instances, Dominic, of little things that it did wrong. And we are going to make a whole video going through every issue we had with RoboTaxi during our full day of riding. So that'll be probably an easier way to communicate, because I even forget. It feels like, I forget all the little details of stuff that we have. But we have everything filmed. We've just got to parse through the footage.
Chris and Tom, you have any questions for Kyle about that?
Chris. I'm just jealous. I'm right here in the Bay Area and I can't get an invite. So good for him, man. And it's I've done Waymo out here in San Francisco and I've even compared it to, and that's not the same, but Blue Cruise, and the Tesla specifically in the Model Y is such a smooth I did a video of the Model Y when it launched and did FSD, and it was butter even then compared to what so many others do. Cybertruck not as much. A little bit more jerky and whatnot, but yeah, the throttle control and the smoothness and the naturalness of the way it drives, it's pretty awesome. I'm jealous. I think this is going to be great.
Nice to have that improved so much. I remember when I was doing a lot of test loops with FSD in my car, that was one of my complaints. I didn't think the dynamics, like, it accelerated a little too hard. Sometimes you get the wonky wheel where you're like left, right, left, right, left, right. You know, it can't quite decide how to handle an intersection or stuff. So it sounds like a lot of that is kind of worked out now. So it's interesting.
Absolutely.
To see.
Yes, it is dialed in now.
Kyle, I'm curious, did you ever off camera get to get the safety driver to talk about that button, that holding of the death grip on the door? Did you get anything from that?
No, you know, we mentioned it a few times. Oh, and actually, almost every video we mentioned it, you know, in front of them where they're not supposed to talk to you. None of them really seemed like they wanted to talk at all about anything. Mm-hmm. They were very, very quiet. We never pushed them. You know, in fact, the only kind of rules and regulations I went over at the beginning of this video was specifically to not talk to them. And I'm like, okay, well, that's fine. We're just going to talk about them on camera in front of them, but they can't say anything about it.
That's kind of weird.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if afterwards maybe one of them said something, but no, it sounds like not.
No, they were not that interested in talking about the service. It didn't seem like. You could tell a couple times, like especially in upcoming videos, we were getting, Colton and I were having a blast. We were really messing with the system and them. They were starting to chuckle and we're like, oh, this guy's definitely not just a robot. It's, you know, it's a real human behind those sunglasses. But they were cool, and I'm sure they will all have some stories in like 5 years from now when they can talk about the early days of riding in the robo taxis.
That's great. Right.
I can see him.
Did it ever feel like a remote person was taking over the car? I thought I heard some people mentioning that.
Yeah, when we got stuck in an infinite loop. Actually, I believe we had two instances where we had to have a remote operator influence our ride. And one of them we posted on as a short recently, but that'll be a full video as well. We essentially had an issue where we were in this infinite loop. And, you know, I was just explaining to the viewers, we have a couple options to call for help if we needed it. And I was going to see how long we could stay in this loop for. I was going to wait, you know, all day if we had to. I was having the best time. And I accidentally grazed the support button with my finger and it called them. And I was like, ah, crap. And they knew, they must have been watching us because there's only probably a handful of these rolling around Austin. And every time they called, they were instant on the phone. They're like, hey, guys, we see what's going on. And, you know, they're like, the car will fix it. And yeah, then the steering wheel started to move in a totally unnatural way. Autopilot came off and the cameras came up on the screen, which made me think, oh, they've totally remoted into this thing with their little steering wheel in their office. They drove us out of the loop route and got us on another way in. And then autopilot took us to the destination.
Gotcha.
So you can see the little blue steering wheel on the screen. That still works like it does. Like you can tell when FSD is on and off then.
Sort of, yeah. I mean, it definitely was glitching out. You can definitely watch that video and we'll post it, the full length version as well soon. The screen was doing all sorts of stuff that I've never seen the normal FSD version do. There was like different up arrows, forward stuff where they're like prodding the car to move. There's probably a command that's like, go now. And the car was showing up with an arrow, you know, looking forwards. Then it would hit the brakes and it would do other stuff. Then they took over clearly remotely and drove us out of the loop.
Right on. All right.
But the interesting thing about that, sorry, was that never once throughout the whole day did the safety driver interact with anything. The only thing they would do is when something weird would happen, they would hit a RoboTaxi logo to log the event after it would happen. So for example, someone I think kind of messed with us and tried to look like they were going to run in front of the RoboTaxi and we slammed on the brakes. It wasn't super hard, but we braked pretty hard. And he, you know, reached over and hit that RoboTaxi button to log the event to save the data. But we had no safety related interventions. We had operational issues, pick up, drop off, infinite loops, stuff like that, but never an actual safety thing. What I really want to do is go there next time with another car and start to mess with the RoboTaxi and see how it avoids accidents. But right. I think we'd probably get arrested for doing that.
Yeah, that sounds like a tricky situation. Yeah. That's what proving grounds are for or something. And yeah, manufacturers probably wouldn't let independent people come in and mess with their stuff like that. But
well, it's on public roads. You know, manufacturer can't stop.
Well, right.
If he just took a car and cut them off or whatever, you know.
Well, what a great
braking, you know, whatever, you know, just.
What a great juxtaposition, though, of what we were talking about earlier, where Ford is so cautious and careful and Tesla's like, let's just throw this thing out on the roads and, you know, here we go. Let's see how it works. And that's just such an interesting dynamic, the difference between them. I love it. I mean, it was funny. We were talking about Europe earlier. I finally saw an I-Pace with that wasn't Waymo white with a bunch of gear on top of it. And I was like, oh, these I-Paces don't look too bad. But those I-Paces are, you know, well, the Model Y is just this common car that's out there without all this gear on it. You know, is it perfectly tuned today? No, but it's going to be. And that's a pretty impressive at a cheap rate. I think it's staggering to me to watch what Kyle, him going through all these different things. And I'm like, man, that's incredible to me.
Right. Well, it sounds like there's a whole bunch more Waymo RoboTaxi content coming to the Out of Spec channels coming up. So keep an eye out for that. Anything you want to mention again about that, Kyle?
Honestly, I thought for a beta, for an early days, it's fun to laugh at the issues, but overall, it's amazing how solid and safe the experience felt, truly. And I brought Colton along on purpose because he's kind of an FSD hater. And I'm like, well, let's see what, you know, I'm obviously into it more than your average, you know, car enthusiast. Colton's like, I drive myself. I don't want to use FSD. And, you know, at the end of the day, he was really convinced. He's like, oh shit, this is really cool.
Okay. Right on. Interesting to hear that perspective.
I think the other thing I'll add about FSD and RoboTaxi and all this kind of stuff is that, you know, I look at my mom who's, you know, retired and some of her vision is going and she can't drive at night anymore. And I think more about just the mobility as, you know, as I get older and whatnot, this technology, it's going to give your freedom back. It's going to be really transformative for a lot of people that, you know, that have to rely on paratransit or relatives and these other, you know, shuttle buses from retirement centers. There's so many cool possibilities here down the road that I love seeing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right on. A lot of good promise, I think. All right. Hey, this week, Kyle, you've had a Chevy Silverado EV Trail Boss on loan, which I gather you really like. And I'd like to hear about that. But also, you towed the Lightship this week, and that's an RV that comes with its own battery and motor, which is supposed to greatly extend how far you can tow. So I'd like to hear a little bit about that. But also the truck, real quick.
Yeah, so we have videos coming, I think even today, starting on Lightship, which is a collapsible RV, towable RV, very expensive, very high-end starting, at least. And they're built in Colorado, which is really exciting. It's really one of the first of a couple of these new generation RVs that are designed to be towed behind electric vehicles. That means integrated battery pack, drive unit, HVAC systems, thermal loops, zonal architectures, ECUs that control each area. It's really a car and a house in one. And it's very complicated, and it's done to the same approach of Tesla, Rivian, Lucid, these startup automakers. They're radicalizing the RV industry, which has been really one of the worst industries for quality. Now, of course, you can go up to the Airstream, really nice stuff, and that's kind of their competition area. But it's all about, you know, future technology and integrating it nicely. So really nice product. We've done many tours. We shot an update on all of the trim levels and options that'll come up. We shot a full factory tour. And most interestingly to me is they let us be the first ones outside of the company to tow their Lightship. Now, you guys know I usually don't hold back. If something's terrible, I'm going to say it's pretty terrible. And so they were super nervous. They like kept trying to schedule phone calls and these things ahead of time. I'm like, dude, if it doesn't work, I'm not going to come. Like, just make sure we can tow it. I'll show up and we'll shoot the video. Like, that's all I'm interested in doing. And you know what? They got it dialed in, I guess. And I used a Rivian R1T for our first towing experience. And it was a really cool drive. I don't want to give too much away ahead of the video. We might talk about it next week. But it was unlike any experience I've ever had driving a car. And it's very, very new. As someone who drives cars all day, every day, it's very new to have new experiences and in a great way. And I'm really thrilled with the tuning, the performance, the overall impact that this trailer has on, you know, towing with an electric vehicle or even a combustion or gas vehicle, improving performance and efficiency. The last point I'll bring up to you is we wanted to do efficiency and range testing. They said we could do efficiency testing. However, the trailer was not designed to go over around 65 miles an hour yet. They needed more calibration. I said, that's lame. Why did you tell us to come tow this thing if it's not totally done and dialed in? So what we agreed to is they'll let me know as soon as it can go 70 miles an hour, then I can do our range and efficiency testing. They were like, why don't you run it at 55 miles an hour? I'm like, I get that's the California state speed limit for towing. No one does that. People drive, especially when you have this much range, people are going to drive 70 miles an hour towing. That's what I tow. Anything above that feels a little quick with an EV, but you know, 65, 70 miles an hour, the trailer's got to be able to do that. Until it can do that, I'm not towing it for a video. And yeah, so we did like an initial around surface roads drive. All the actual testing will come in a few weeks.
All right, Tom is going to take off.
I got to roll. I got a call that I'm already a minute late to. Everybody have a great weekend. Chris, thanks for joining us. Kyle, good to talk to you. I can't say see you. And see you guys next week.
See you, Tom.
Thanks, Tom. Yeah, sorry about that. He's got a recharge rescue video that we kind of wanted to talk about too. So I guess we'll cover that next week. But yes, and so real quickly on the Lightship, like reading the website or reading some materials, I got the impression that you're kind of not supposed to be able to feel that you have a trailer behind you. That's kind of what they're trying to sell it, but that's not really the reality, right?
No. I mean, you definitely know there's a bunch of stuff happening behind you, but it's all good stuff. So I don't know. I would just wait for the video. It'll be either tomorrow or the next day. And it's just it's honestly a pretty magical experience. It's really cool.
Okay. Magical sounds good.
Yeah. You know, there was nothing bad about the towing experience at all.
Okay. So in my mind, I was thinking like when we pulled like that 10,000 pound trailer, this is like 6,500 pounds, 77,000 pounds.
Sorry about that. So this was 8,000 pounds because it was fully loaded.
Oh, okay. That's all the way. So that's just about like the 10,000.
I can't hear you guys. I have to drop off again. Every once in a while, okay. My phone freaks out.
No problem.
Losing them. We're losing people, Dom.
That's right. Everyone's the man overboard. So we pulled the that big trailer with 300 kilowatt hour battery recently in the back. And we could definitely feel it in the Rivian more. And the Rivian was kind of like tugging. You could feel it tugging, the trailer behind it, like the Rivian. It was 10,000 pounds. That's the limit for those cars anyway.
I'd love to see the range on a Silverado combined with that airship. What was it called? Lightship,
yeah. And they have two different battery options. I think they have like a 44 kilowatt hour battery in that area. And then what is it, 70 kilowatt hour battery that you had, Kyle?
Yeah, it's 72 or 74 usable, plus or minus.
Right. What kind of range do you think you can get with just like taking a guess? Well, like you have 220 kilowatt hours in the truck, 70 kilowatt hours there.
Yeah, that's why I brought the Silverado, because originally they're like, come and tow it and do your range test. And I'm like, I called Chevy. I'm like, you need to figure out a way to get us a Silverado right away. This is going to be awesome. They were all pumped about it. And then we show up there, or like a couple days ahead, they're like, actually, this can't go 70 miles an hour. We're like, screw you guys. What the heck? So annoying. Anyway, we got some great videos out of it regardless. I think it would go over 400 miles at 70 miles an hour.
And that's incredible.
Over how many miles? Sorry.
Over 400 miles.
At 70 miles an hour?
Yes.
Damn. Somebody pointed out I should show you the picture. So I pull up a photo of it on X of you pulling it with that red trail boss. Yeah, I think this is a great. What's the name of the other company that does a similar product?
Pebble,
that's right. But is Lightship a little bit ahead of them on their trajectory?
Actually, I don't know about that. I think they're honestly pretty evenly matched on the trajectory.
Right. Okay.
Pebble's been able to be towed for a while, so maybe Pebble's a bit ahead.
Okay. Yeah. Man, I think these things are great. I love the design. What's the MSRP off the top of your head, if you know it?
Yeah, $250,000 for this one.
Okay. And that's in line with, like a bus RV?
Say that again?
Is that kind of in line with like a bus RV?
Oh, no, those are way more money.
Okay. So.
Yeah. But if you're talking nice, like a new old, they're like a couple million bucks. You can go for like a... I don't even know.
Why money?
Yeah, you got to watch Andrew Steele or Matt's RV reviews. But you're not getting a nice bus for $250,000. You're getting like a Class C motorhome, like one of those van conversions. But all of those are pretty poor quality.
Right, right, exactly. And this, you got to look inside, I guess, and see it pretty closely. Not poor quality.
It's too early to tell. I didn't get to see the interior of a series production unit. All the ones that I saw were prototypes and they were perfect, but I don't know how they're going to dial that in for the serial production units. We'll find out next week. Like next week, the first one rolls off the line. They were putting the interior in it while we were there.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. I'm really excited for this whole advent of trailers with the batteries inside. Maybe we can talk about this more in the future because we're kind of low on time right now. We're actually a little over time. But I guess there's nothing more that we need to talk about really. I wanted to talk about whether they mentioned like charging your home off the Lightship at all, but we can talk about that in the future.
Yeah. We've mentioned that in other videos as well. It supports bi-directional. It's got solar on the roof. It's got DC fast charging with the NACS port. It's got everything you could need. It's not missing anything.
Okay. So the only other thing was the one to mention. Oh, right. This is not even a really big story. Is that the Lucid, they launched the, they have a, at the Monterey Car Week, they launched a version of the Gravity that's kind of like a, what is it, overland kind of version. I'm trying to pull it up on my screen. My computer's slow here.
Yeah, it's like their version of like the Mach-E Rally, but the Gravity Rally.
Yeah, yeah, right. So the Gravity is kind of like poo-pooed by some as being a minivan. And which, you know, fair. I don't know. You, Kyle, you've seen it in person and driven it. It's kind of minivan. But do you think this Outlander thing helps it at all?
I think they just need to focus on producing Gravities and not making more versions of a car they're already having trouble building.
Fair. That's fair. So, yeah, there's reports that they didn't build any in July, but that's not quite true. I think they built like, was it, someone said they built either three or nine?
No, very that, low number. That's all incorrect. That was all was incorrect. It?
Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay.
They built a few hundred. They've read, hundreds of them. I don't know. My guess would probably be 300 or 400 if I had to guess, but it's not nine.
Okay, that's good to hear then. They had me pretty kind of worried because I heard that they're expecting to build like a many times more what they've built already in the second half of the year. Like it's really ramping up now. And so ramping up from nine to, you know, several times that is not amazing, but ramping up from several hundred is obviously much better.
Well, look, here's the thing. There's no question they nailed the product. The range, the charging, the driving dynamics, the, I think, quality of it. It's an amazing product. They just totally fumbled the production. Now, I am not a qualified production reviewer. I don't know what part of the process is messed up, but clearly there are major, deep-rooted, production-related issues, and they can't escape that. So that's something that's really biting them right now, and I think really puts a stain on an otherwise near perfect vehicle for families.
True. Yeah, the rollout has not been good. Not when you're like a startup, and you know you're like not begging for money, but you know they've got a good backer in the Saudi PIF fund. But yeah, the execution has not been great on the production side at all. So they really need to turn that around, especially if they want to do like high volume vehicles. I think they're supposed to show off a new vehicle here pretty soon. Not this, but the
midsize that Corey's working on, that midsize, which, man, they've got to scale that thing and they got to nail this if they're going to ever try to do a midsize. And I had heard whispers about them having magnet problems, getting magnets for their motors. And I don't know if that's excuse making, but that's what I had heard locally here in the Bay Area.
Right. I mean, there's been a bit of an issue with rare earths and materials out of China. They've put stops on rare earth stuff at some points. And even lithium, there has to be a lot of battery materials now. They have to get a special license to export. So China's kind of putting the, you know, trying to, I don't know, really take advantage of its position as a world leader in mineral processing for battery-related materials. But that's a whole other conversation.
Look, at the end of the day, this SUV concept probably would have been received way more positively if the company was where they thought they would be with production by now. The fact that this off-road version is just a concept and provides no material value to the end user, I think, is just a distraction from the real things that the company needs to be focused on. Now, obviously, the design team doesn't need to be working on production issues, but to me, it just seems like every alarm bell needs to be going off in Lucid right now to get these things out to customers. I have many personal friends, actually, including myself, waiting for the opportunity to buy a Lucid Gravity, and they just keep delaying orders and delaying orders. A buddy of mine is a Dream Edition reservation holder, very, you know, normal spec, and he's been dying to get his. He owns a Sapphire as well. Like, this is a guy who's into Lucid and just can't get a freaking car. This is a real problem. And they're amazing cars. I'm not, that's the thing. Everyone wants it because it's so good, but they got to build it.
Right. Yeah. I'm really, man, that's a fair point.
Every video looks great, man. Kyle's video is amazing. Jerry Rig Everything just had a video with it. Charge Positive Tolik has some great videos with the Gravity with an actual owner, which was, that's a rarity. So there's some great stuff by on his Charge Positive channel with a real Gravity owner, where they take it around, they charge it, they do some different things, and everything about that vehicle looks great, except that they can't produce it. You know, yeah, it's just unfortunate.
So someone was saying at the top of the show that the new Chevy Bolt has been seen. I'm not really sure if that was an official thing. It's not on their yes. media site.
It's spy photos. They were out testing them, and actually, we've got two separate emails from viewers who saw them and sent us some actual photos.
Okay, yeah. I see some spy photos here. I'll just throw this up on the screen real quick. 2027 Bolt EV, and that's basically it there. And it looks a lot like the old Bolts. I mean, I think I'd have to see them side by side. The front does look a little bit different, but
very similar to the EUV, you know, that they would have. And it did. It was a great seller. Nothing wrong with that. So
yeah, I thought they did a pretty good job with the EV, like on the styling. It's kind of boring, but that's fine for that segment. But I think we're just about out of time. We've lost Kyle again, so we should probably call it a day. I mean, he's got a video too about his that XCharge GridLink. This is a DC charger in Colorado with the battery built into it that he had upgraded that he wanted to talk about. He's got a video out, so if people are interested in that, it's maybe worth checking that out. Also, he had finished so last week we talked about this new series of videos he was making that was pretty interesting, called the Run to Zero, where you take a car and like kind of low state of charge and then drive it to zero just to see how it, because they all EVs, they all kind of handle that differently now, right? Oh, he's with us again, actually, at the stage. Right. You're back with us here. Just about to head out, Kyle, and just mentioning your Run to Zero thing, that your first video is up. So if people want to see what happens when you in a Nissan Leaf limo with two batteries, when it gets to a low state of charge and eventually runs out completely, you can tune in and check that video out. But I think, anything you want to say about that, Kyle, before we go? Maybe he can't hear us.
Yeah,
just got you guys back.
Okay, well, we're just going to let you go, but I was just mentioning you put your first drive to zero or run to zero video up on the AutoSpec testing channel. Anything you want to say about that before we go?
Nope, it's on the testing channel. No need to go into it in detail, but it was a fun one. I like the series. We're going to do more.
Kyle, I noticed there was a point where you turned the Leaf off and then kind of turned it right back on again to see if it would power up. Do you think waiting longer? I've seen some vehicles where if you wait like 5 minutes and then power it back up, or do you think that would mess up the test to wait that long? Or do you think it would make no difference?
It's so bad, guys. I really apologize. I've got to got bad service.
Okay. Let's just call it a day then. How's that? A week.
Sounds good.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us on this episode, Chris.
Such a pleasure.
Yeah, it's been great having you, man. We'll have to have you back sometime. Yeah, it's awesome. So I guess that brings us to the end of our show. If you have any questions or comments, please leave them below or get in touch with us on the social media platform of your choice. Don't forget, if you like the show, please give us a thumbs up, click subscribe, tap that bell icon for notifications. Great to see you all again, of course, and we'll see you next week.
Say it.
Ciao.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.